Welcome to the Frugal Networker podcast, everyone. This is Ken Hesch, your host, and today I'm very pleased to have on with me Danielle Wedgeworth. She is the author of the new novel, Phoenix Republic, The Lone Star Gambit. And welcome to the show, Danielle.
Hi, Ken. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Glad to have you on. Hey, it's been a long, hard road here with your novel and getting everything done, right?
Yeah, it's taken me a couple years. I thought it would be a lot quicker than that, but, you know, it turns out editing takes a while.
Yeah, writing is a tough process, believe me. I totally understand, which is probably why I haven't written the great American novel. So let's have you tell us about yourself, first of all.
Okay, sure. You know, I'm someone that's always believed, I guess, in a brighter tomorrow. I went to college, got a job, pretty much worked in business for, you know, about 10 minutes until I got bored stiff. And then I decided to, do what any person with a private college education would do. I joined the United States Army as a private. And after that, I did that for, you know, about 10 years, give or take, how you count some of the different components. And then after that, I worked for myself for a year or two and decided that was too hard to work and got into the computer game and worked in IT. And that's where I'm still doing today when I'm not writing something.
How did you get started writing?
It's just one of those things. I tend to have an opinion or two, and I would talk to people, and I just decided I don't think I was really getting through with my point, so I decided to try to do that through entertainment, and I thought, I'm going to write a novel, and I didn't know when I started writing if I would finish or not, but I was going to start, and, you know, 2 years later, I had a novel.
So tell us about your current project, The Phoenix Republic. Give us kind of an overview of what it's about.
Well, Phoenix Republic's a political thriller. It's about 180,000 words, and it's just coming out now. The basic premise of the book is pretty much in the current time frame, give or take. It takes readers from what we live every day to a place that gets, you know, pretty sketchy, pretty frightening. And the story follows three sisters as they cope with the collapse of the U.S. dollar. So things are kind of going south on them, and it's, you know, what do you do when things get tough? And it's kind of about family and faith and getting through hard times.
From a libertarian perspective, correct?
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I have gotten over my team sports rooting for the red or blue team. R's and D's, I think, are not really as important as what people's ideas are. And so I kind of got to a point where I'm about freedom, and I don't care, liberal or conservative, doesn't matter as much to me.
Now, what exactly is a libertarian perspective?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people think of left and right linearly. You know, there's, if you put a line down and put a center point, and there's, you know, liberal ideas, and then there's conservative ideas. What I have come to find out, or what I really liked, is a graphic I saw, you know, a few months ago, or maybe I can't remember when I first saw it, but it sort of makes it another axis where they're talking not only about liberal or conservative, but about freedom versus authoritarianism. And, you know, you can have someone like that's far right and very authoritarian, like, say, Nazis or something in the extreme, or you can have someone that's far left but authoritarian, that, you know, communist. And the authoritarian is the common denominator, you know, of those two regimes. And if you put them on a vertical axis, they're kind of close together, even if one's liberal and one's conservative. On the other point, I'm a libertarianism. It moves more toward the freedom angle, and you could be left or right. It's not as important as, you know, what you're willing to do to someone else to make them go along with your point of view.
Interesting. So would you say that the characters in the book are libertarians, or is just the flavor of the book written from that perspective?
I would say that the point of the book is to get people to think for themselves and to be thoughtful people. We can agree and or disagree on any number of things. The characters in the book are pretty much us. So, you know, most Americans, I don't know that they're really paying attention to that degree. I think everybody's got an opinion and, you know, has their viewpoint. There's three sisters in this book. The oldest sister is pretty into this kind of thing and is very much a libertarian. The other two sisters are not as politically active, and they're, you know, much more just, you know, looking at the news and digesting it within their own worldview, but they're not as engaged, and they become more so as things get, you know, dire. But you know, that's something they come to over time.
Now, why do you think you wrote this book? What story are you trying to tell, or what point are you trying to get across?
Sure. The reason I wrote Phoenix Republic was to make a point that freedom is important, and I think it's under fire in our modern world. I'd be very gratified if a reader were to come away from reading the book with a little more awareness of what's going on in the news each day and with the context of how that affects their individual rights. Today I saw a story in Fort Worth, Texas, where they were pulling people over, basically taking, they're asking for blood samples, breathalyzer, and cheek swabs, because they just wanted, there was some federal program where they wanted to know if people were actually driving drunk or on drugs. And it wasn't something where it was like a, you know, if they were going to do anything to these people as a result of the stop, but they were just wanted to know who was on drugs. And, you know, that's kind of a thing that, you know, if it were to happen to you, what would you do? Would you kind of go along or, you know, that's not a constitutional request. So those kinds of stories seem to be happening more and more.
I think probably the story would be different depending on my state. I think if I'd been drinking, I might not be so willing to go along with it.
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, you know, everybody wants, you know, bad people kept off the streets. We all want to be safe from terrorists. But at some point, you know, pulling off your shoes and taking your belt and, you know, having to go through all the stuff at security, going through the scanning machines or being felt up by TSA, at some point it becomes too much, I think. And I think that's kind of where we are. You know, kids are getting sent home from school because they make guns with their fingers or draw a gun or have a gun on a T-shirt or something like that. And it's just getting, it's too much.
It is. And, you know, it's a funny thing. The very first time I ever flew a commercial jet was, oh, probably just a few months, maybe 5 months after 9/11. And everybody was
That was your first time?
Yes. Yes. My very first time, which was a really stupid time to start flying, huh? But
wow.
Yeah, I had to fly, in fact, to the city Phoenix. Isn't that interesting? So the story is that, you know, I went, it was January, so it was cold outside and I had on a coat. But you know, I acted nervous in the terminal and probably had to go to the bathroom about 20 times, you know, while I was waiting, and I was really, really nervous. And I guess whoever was watching the cameras or observing people's behavior noticed that. And they had me take my shoes off, had me take my coat off, all this stuff. You know, it's just crazy. I'm like, you know what? If you've seen my picture, if anybody wants to look, I mean, I do not look like a terrorist. And, you know, I don't know what a terrorist look like, but I can guarantee you that I don't look like a terrorist in any sense of the word. And, it was just weird for me to have to almost strip down for these guys because, you know, I was nervous because this was my first flight ever. And
no, no doubt.
It was just a little crazy. In fact, when we were taking off out here at the airport, I, you know, leaned over and put my head in my coat and wished I was back home with my baby girl. And I was scared to death, man. I'd never flown a commercial jet before, and I was quite worried about it. And the stewardess kept asking me, "Are you okay, sir? Are you okay?" I was like, "Okay, don't talk to me."
right. Well, but, I mean, think about it. They're going after, you know, grandmothers in walkers and, you know, 3-year-old girls wearing jumpsuits, and, you know, the political correctness that's involved with that. It's not effective, and it's nuts. The Israelis do a much better job, and granted, they have a much smaller population. But, you know, I have no problem being searched if I'm profiled and doing something weird. You mentioned being nervous.
Yeah.
If you're nervous to a point, then maybe you get to a point where there is probable cause and you can ask a few questions. But, you know, getting, you know, granny and looking in a child's diaper kind of thing is just too much.
I guess I didn't mind all that much considering what had just happened a few months earlier. But, you know, it hasn't happened since because I'm a little bit better now. But anyway, Phoenix Republic, why the name Phoenix Republic?
Sure. Well, the title is Phoenix, meaning the flaming bird version of Phoenix as opposed to the city, is a classic symbol of renewal. The story is one about rebirth of liberty, and it occurred to me when I was, you know, working on titles and trying to figure out what I wanted to do that the Phoenix was a perfect symbol for what I was writing about.
So, you know, one of my wife's uncles is a psychologist, and we were talking, many times about writing and novels and so on. And he told me, once that your first novel is an autobiography. Now, I have to ask you, is that true in your case? Or, you know, are you a character in the book? Or do you sort of tell the story from your perspective? Or, you know, how does that work?
Well, if you would have asked me while I was writing Phoenix Republic, I would have said, no, I'm not a character. And I really didn't think of it that way when I was doing it. As it's turned out, that's a little different than I thought. I would say that I ended up being a character. I didn't intend for it to be, but I'm a little bit like the oldest sister. It's not a perfect fit, but if I had to pick somebody, Kate, which is the oldest of the three girls, is probably, you know, fairly close to my personality in many respects.
You know, in the book, you mix up a lot of familiar places and scenarios. And maybe mix up isn't the term I'm looking for, but you blend a lot of familiar sites and things, especially around the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Are you trying to give the reader a feel of place, or are you, or do you have something deeper to say about what's going on in that area in your book?
Well, I mean, absolutely. You know, the places that are familiar are easier to write about because you know them well and you have a better feel. So there are three principal areas or locations in the book where the three sisters live, each in a different city. And the cities that I'm talking about are Dallas, which you mentioned, a little town in Oklahoma called Enid, which I believe is just west of Tulsa, so you probably know that one pretty well. And then, of course, New York City. And I went to college in Enid, so it's been a while, but I have some familiarity. And, of course, Oklahoma is pretty much culturally in the same part of the region of the country as Dallas, so it was a little easier to go with. New York City, I've never lived there or spent any time there. So with New York, I had to rely on friends and, you know, Google Earth to kind of look through the locations where I was having the book take place. So mixing the familiar with, you know, a little bit of storytelling with regards to New York. And the point of all that was really to have three different locations in the country to reach out to different people. And it's the every man sort of book. I wanted to have people that could identify with different kinds of characters.
The thing I noticed about the book is it has a real sense of reality to it. You know, it feels like scenarios in it could really happen. Were you writing with that kind of perspective, or do you think that your writing is any way prophetic at all?
Well, you know, I guess I sure hope not, although I kind of think it probably is. I hope that we can, you know, kind of turn away from the path that I think we're headed. We're spending a lot of money, you know, in the government, and I think we're losing a lot of rights, and those kind of things, I think, are leading us to where they're leading us. So, you know, I hope not. That's one of the things I hope readers can take from this book. Is maybe they recognize something that, you know, disturbs them a little sooner after having read the book than maybe they otherwise they would have, or maybe they're a little less likely to go along with an unconstitutional search, or, you know, willing to stand up for their rights a little sooner than otherwise they might have.
One thing that really struck me in the book, and I think I've mentioned this to you before, I can't say most or all, but there was one particular love scene that I really liked. You know, and here's the weird thing about it. I never really noticed that kind of thing before in reading. Maybe it's my age. Maybe it's my current temperament or whatever. But, you know, my mother used to say, because she read a lot, and my wife reads a lot of books, and my mom always said that she liked them kind of spicy. Well, I didn't know really what she meant by that. You know, she read things like Valley of the Dolls and, you know, some other stuff. And, you know, she really wouldn't let me even near those books. But, you know, I always wondered what she meant. But now I think I know. I mean, I wouldn't call the book, you know, that's not the main gist of it. But I think it fits well. I don't think it's like a lot of editors say when they pick up novels. It's not an obligatory or expected thing in the book. I think it's just part of natural life that, you know, it helps the story. I don't think it's just a, you know, insert love scene here kind of thing.
Right, right.
And, you know, it's a touchy thing for some people, but I think you did a great job on those. And
appreciate it.
You know, I have to silently applaud. I have to silently applaud your effort there. Anyway, moving on. Where can we find the book? Is it currently available?
Yeah, Phoenix Republic has just come out, or it's been, you know, out a number of weeks. It's available in ebook format, pretty much anywhere an ebook is sold. But conveniently enough, I have links to the retailers that carry the ebook formats that I'm available in on my website, and that would be www.lonestarnovel.com. You can go to Amazon or wherever you normally buy them, or you can just go to my website and link through there. I would also mention that if you do go to the website, I've got a trailer out there, and there's a free sample available, and you can kind of take a look at some of the artwork that we did, you know, for the characters. It's kind of cool, I think. And I guess it's also available in paperback at Amazon.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I love the artwork. You know, it's very, I've described it as graphic novel type before, but let me ask you, in the print version of the book, do you sign copies of it for people who want you to, or are signed copies available for purchase?
Sure. I've signed a few. If you want to reach out through my website, there's a contact place at the, I think, on one of the pages that you can reach out, and I can work out a way to get a book to you. So, yeah, we do have some that we can do, and I can sign that if someone's interested.
So, here's the big question for Phoenix Republic, The Lone Star Gambit. What makes it The Lone Star Gambit?
Well, The Lone Star Gambit is basically, well, let me back up. I started to have this story be about, you know, sort of a Texas nationalism kind of thing. I'm always telling people, especially if I'm talking with someone from overseas, that, you know, Texas started off as its own country, and maybe that wouldn't be such a bad idea. But, you know, the more I wrote about it, the more I thought about it, a secession kind of a thing is really not, I think, in anybody's interest. I think we need to get back to a constitutional basis for our country, but we need to find a way to stick together. And so this novel is kind of, it goes along a path where we have to have some pretty harsh consequences. And yeah, there's some disagreement between the federal and state level, but it's not what you would expect. It's not the typical Texas secession story. And so, you know, The Lone Star Gambit is Texas trying something a little different. And you'll have to read along to find out what that is, but I hope people do that.
Very good. So here's a good question for you personally. What's next for Danielle Wedgeworth?
Well, I'm promoting Phoenix Republic, of course, and I've got a national ad running on the Blaze, or at least the Blaze Radio. It's on Saturdays. Buck Sexton has a show that's pretty cool, and so I'm supporting that. As far as new projects, I've just started another, a second book, Sovereign's Journey is the working title, and that's a sci-fi takeoff on the Pilgrim story. I'm still going to be talking about the themes I, you know, am so passionate about, which is freedom and self-reliance and individual liberty. But I'm going to try my hand at a sci-fi book. And I thought, what better thing than to have, you know, basically political distance trying to settle, you know, a new planet someplace.
Very interesting. I like that. I like sci-fi, and it sounds good. So The Phoenix Republic is a standalone book. It's not part of a series.
Well, you know, I've had people ask me about that, and, you know, I've had people that want to hear, you know, what happens after the book, and of course, I guess that's the typical thing if you write something that, you know, departs drastically from the reality that we all know today. I've had people that want me to write about the what happens to the other side of the argument, if Texas is kind of, you know, sticking by freedom and some of those principles, how does it work out? And so, you know, I'm not saying I won't come back to it in the future, but, you know, for the moment, I'm going to kind of let it go and see what happens. And you know, I might come back to it. You never know.
I'm kind of hoping you do. I'm looking forward to it because there were some unanswered questions for me.
No, well, then by gosh, I'll have to.
So how can readers get in contact with you, like on Twitter, Facebook, et cetera?
Sure. And I have all that, the Twitter and the Facebook. In fact, I do have a Facebook page that I would just love people to go out and like the page. And you just look up Phoenix Republic on Facebook or my name. Or actually, even easier than that, my website, LoneStarNovel.com, has all of the social media and my blog and all that, and the one of the pages, I think the Connect page or one of those at the end, have that. And I love to, you know, talk about this stuff and drive people nuts with my opinions and see what they're thinking as well. So under the Connect or Gist book, I think that's actually what that might be.
Yeah, I think that's very good to engage your audience like that. And I'm
hoping, it's just fun, too.
Yeah, and I'm hoping you had a lot of success with it. And so,
well, I appreciate that.
It was great having you on today, and I appreciate it. And when you finish your next novel, I sure want you to come back and tell us all about it.
I'll be glad to. You know I will.
Great. Thank you. Today, I've been speaking with author Danielle Wedgeworth on The Frugal Networker. This has been your host, Ken Hess, and I'll see you next time.